Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the bottom of Sama Kimmel Medbet. Vamar Rav Nachman. Haiman de Osif Pshite Mechavre. Someone who borrows money from his friend. Pshite, copper coins, small coins. Veshkach be tofaino. And he finds in there excess. Meaning more than he had asked to borrow, he finds in the money that was handed to him. Ibichde shadat toeh. If it's an amount that people would make a mistake about, there could be feasibly a mistake in the amount of money he's given to him, then he has to give it back to him because we assume that he made a mistake. Ilav, if it looks more intentional, then matana ba'almahu du'yoyivle. It's a gift that he's giving to him, and therefore he can hold on to it. What does it mean that it's something that would be normal to make a mistake about? Amravacha, brother of Yosef, be isuraita v'chum shaita. In the case of tens and fives, as the Balei Tosafot point out, Rashi does in a similar manner, that they were regilim v'chamisha k'derach shanamonim echad, echad. He says, like, we enumerate 1, 1, 1, they enumerate by fives. Lidan avi b'chol inyan b'chdesha dat toeh. And therefore, today, where we count by ones, everything would be classified as a mistake, since that is a natural mistake that someone would make. If there are excesses of fives or tens, truth is, once it's five, so it could be a ten as well, but he has an excess of 2 fives, or if 3 fives, 1 10, 3 fives, if the excess is amount by which he could have made a mistake when he was counting and added in additional coins, then you have to return the excess. On the other hand, if it's an odd number of excess, like 1, 2, 3, or 4 coins, then we assume that it is in a gift because people don't make mistakes counting in that manner. He's counting out by fives. Why would he end up with this odd number in there, which has nothing to do with the round number that he's trying to get to? The way Rashi seems to explain it, it doesn't matter how many are in excess. The assumption is it's a mistake when it's a round number of 5 or 10. But if it's an odd number, then we assume the oddity is the mistake. Rashi doesn't enumerate any limit here. The truth is that it's a loan. He's lending him money, and the underlying assumption would be that everything he gives him is a loan. For us to determine otherwise, it has to be something that's really outside of what would be the normal mistake a person would make, and therefore we would assume it's a gift. In most scenarios, we're just going to assume it's a mistake, or he lent him more money than he had asked for. Otherwise, you check with him. Obviously, the question comes up when you can't check with him if he's not around anymore. The guy goes overseas, he passes away. What's the status of the coins? So again, only the odd coins are the ones that we determine or deem to be a gift. Anything that's a round number that is part of the enumeration that could have been a mistake, we're going to assume that it was a mistake and it wasn't a gift. And he has to return it. Amalei Rav Acha b'rei d'Rav Lo Rav Ashi. V'inish takifahu. What happens if he is a difficult person? The lo di'ayiv matana, that doesn't give gifts. In that he is miserly, he's not known for his generosity, and therefore why would you ever assume that he's giving a gift? Mai, what's the din? Amalei, dilma migzal gazle, v'iv lele b'cheshbon. Maybe he stole from him, and now he's trying to pass the money back in an unobtrusive way. He's trying to do it without having to tell him that he had stolen from him, and that he's returning the money in this manner. The Tanya, we have a bright that we saw at the end of Baba Kama, Gozel Tchaviro, person who steals from his friend, Vivlia lo b'cheshbon, and he includes it in some other payment, Yatzah, he's Yotzei, by the return of the money in that manner. V'i inish de'ati ma'almo, if it's someone who is, he has no previous relationship with, Delo shakel v'tari b'hadei, he has had no interaction with this individual in the past, Mai, what's the din there? Why would you assume it's a matana? Amalei, dilma inish achrine gazle. Maybe a third party stole from him. Amalei, ki yazif plone pshite minach. When so-and-so borrows money from you, ivlele b'cheshbon. Throw it into the account. So it may not even be from that person. It may be from someone else. So again, we're trying to deal with what seems to be an oddity here, that the person borrowed money and he's getting more money than he should have in the borrowing. Normally, we wouldn't assume that someone is a ganav or a gazlan, but over here, where you have both the oddity of it being a number that people wouldn't normally make a mistake about, plus the fact that he's lending him money, the two together make us think that there are other possibilities as to why this money is here and that it's a gift to him. Again, if it's a amount or a number by which it would be natural to make a mistake, we will assume that it is a mistake and you'd have to return that money. Amar Rav Kahana, Aviyat Vivna B'Shilei Pirkei D'Rav. I was sitting at the tail end of the drush of Rav, B'Shamit V'Kamar, and I kept hearing him say, Kare, Kare, the gourds, the gourds. V'lo Yadana my Kamar, and I had no idea what he was speaking about. So he came late to the drush, he was there at the end of the drush, so he missed it. And Rav kept speaking about these gourds. Balter the Kam Rav, after Rav finished up the shir, Amidahu, my kari kari, the kama Rav. What exactly is the story with these gourds that Rav kept speaking about? Amruli, hachi kama Rav. So they responded to me, the people who were at the shir responded to me and said, this is what Rav said. Hai man deyoib zuze the gina, person who pays money to a gardener or to a farmer, akare, for the purchase or the forward purchase of gourds. Ka'azle asara kare bnei zarto. And people buy, or what you would buy in this case is you'd buy 10 gourds at the specific price for this size of a gourd. Bnei Zarta is a small gourd. Amarle, and the gardener says to the individual purchasing it, Yehibnelach bnei garmida, I will give you larger gourds for the same price, just you have to take future delivery of them. Itnehu, if he has them in possession, shari, then it's mutar. Letnehu, if he doesn't have them in possession, asur. The Gemara says, pshita, what's the question here? We've already determined when you buy something for forward delivery, the only way that you're allowed to do that is if the person has the item in possession, then you can do it. If he doesn't have it in possession, you can't do it. Unless, again, there's a easily determined market price where you can go and replace it in the market at that price. So over here, if he has it, it would work. If he doesn't have it, it doesn't work. Gemara says, no, Maududeva came into Meiloka Rabu, Shabir Dami. Maybe here, because they grow naturally, it would be okay. Kamash Malon, that it's not okay. So over here, you might have thought differently, where by, in a normal case where you're buying for forward delivery, over there you have the product, and then the person has to procure the product. If he doesn't have it in hand, he's got to go find the product somewhere else. Again, if there's an easily determined market price where he can go and buy it from someone else, that's fine as well. But in a case where it's not available to him, there's no market price out there, then he has to go out and procure whatever it is that he is promising you that he doesn't have. And that's problematic. Over here, he's promising you gourds that he already has in hand. The size of the gourds that you want, you don't have yet. But the gourds here will grow to the size that he will sell them to you in the future. So over here, we would have thought that itnehu, that they are considered as if he has them already. So even though today they're smaller gourds, if he just leaves them on the vine, the gourds will grow to be bigger gourds, and it's as if he has it currently. So kamash malon, that we don't say that we don't assume just because they could grow naturally, that it's as if he has them in hand. And that was the conclusion of the Gemara. That's the Chiddush here, which is that you don't, even though it seems to be a natural outcome or the natural progression of these gourds, nevertheless, you can't buy them in this manner because of the fact that they're not here today. That's a sheet of Rashi. According to the Rif and the Rambam, the question of the Gemara revolves around whether you have the ability to purchase this smaller gourd and then take possession of it and basically leave it in your friend's field to grow. If you are able to do that, then it's not a problem of rebeat because you bought it and now the gourd is yours and it's simply growing in your friend's field. On the other hand, if you're unable to acquire it, then as it grows or expands, there's a problem of rebeat because of the fact that you didn't take possession of it and you're getting something bigger for the price of the smaller item because he forwarded you the money, he gave you the money at an earlier date. Come on. Who's this like? Ki hai tano. Similar to a tano that we find in a Braita, the Tanya. Olech lachlov et izav, v'ligzoz et v'chelav, lirdot et kvarato. Person's going to milk his goats, to shear his ewes, or to scrape out his honeycombs. Mitzao chavero, along the way, while he's on his way to go do the work, he bumps into his friend who says to him, Amarlo, Ma she izai chovot machor lecha. Whatever my goats produced is sold to you. Ma she rechelai goes zot. Whatever is sheared from my ewes, machor lecha, is sold to you. Ma she kvarati rodeh. Whatever I scrape out of my honeycomb, machor lecha, is sold to you, mutar. In that case, it's totally fine. He's selling him whatever the production is. There's no quantity that is guaranteed over here. He's simply saying that whatever is produced, you will get. Aval, imam arlo, on the other hand, if he says it in the following manner, he formulates it this way, mashi zai chovot kach vekach, that which my goats milk, and he gives a quantity, assigns a quantity what he thinks it's going to be, machor lach, and that's sold to you, mashi rechelai gozuzot kach vekach machor lach, or that which will be sheared from my ewes, and here is the quantity that we would expect. Mashik varati rodeh kach vekach, or what I would expect to scrape out of these honeycombs. Machor lach, that's sold to you. Asur, that is asur. Ve'af agav dememelo karabu. And even though there, it's something that is a natural progression. Even if he does not meet the quantity that he promised from the milking, he still, tomorrow, can milk the goats again and get the milk, and eventually will reach the quantity that he has promised. Similarly, with regards to shearing the ewes, the wool will grow back, and eventually he'll get him the quantity that he promised. But kaven delitnu b'ayishata, but since he doesn't have them currently, asur, he can't sell them out. So here the Gemara says this is similar to our case where you're selling something that is extant today, but it's not in its full form, or it's not at the quantity that you want. But in the future, that quantity or size will naturally progress from whatever is today. And therefore, maybe you think you could sell it forward, for forward with delivery. The answer is no, because you don't have it in hand today. You can't do it. And that Tana will be the author of the position that we just brought down from Rav, as Rashi notes over here. He fixes the price, and he says whatever they produce. So even if he's quote-unquote discounting the price, we're never certain as to the quantity that will be produced. And therefore, the buyer's taking the risk of whether it'll be a lot or a little. And since he is undertaking the risk, that is a real purchase. A purchase where you undertake risk is not a loan or a forwarding of cash. That is a purchase, and then you get whatever is there. No more, no less than what is there. The other hand, when you give a fixed quantity as to what he deserves to get, then there's a possibility that he won't be finished today. You won't be able to give him the amount that you promised. And then you're going to have to defer it until a future date when you do have that production on hand. And then it becomes the equivalent of buying wheat for forward delivery, where we say you can't do that because of the risk that the price in the market appreciates. And if it appreciates, now you're giving him more back than he handed you when he paid you the money. And in essence, it looks like you're paying him more because of the money that he paid you up front, or he lent you up front. Here it's derech mecha chumemkar, so it's only a din rabbanan. But nevertheless, it looks like that case of buying a saw for forward delivery when you specify the quantity that you're going to sell. Now, even though, again, this is something that if you had in hand, you would be able to sell it in that way. But since here you don't have it in hand, even though it's a natural progression out of what you do have in hand, it's not allowed. And since he's giving you a discount on the price, you're only allowed to discount when you have the item in hand, as we learned from Rav Nachman yesterday. And so therefore, it's deemed to be, for it looks like, interest. Even if there is a readily available market price. But since you're discounting, that's what caused the issue over here. Yigad Amrei Amarova, there are some say that that Braita is not really a proof to what Rav said, or the Tana that authored the position that Rav was stating, because kaven de memelo karabu shapir dami. Since it happens naturally, then it is okay. Vahatanya, what about the Braita kach v'kach asur? The Braita that we just said that when you give a fixed quantity, even though there's a natural progression over there, it is asur. Hatam lav minei karabu the shakla lehai va'ata achrina biduchte. It's a big difference between the Braita and the case of the gourds. In the case of the Braita, whatever you take is gone, and then it's replaced with some other item. Over here, hacha minei karabu. By the gourds, it's a direct outcome or outgrowth of that which is there. Dechi shakle lehai lo atachrina biduchte. When you pick the gourd, there's no other gourd that's going to show up there. So there is a difference in the case of the gourds, by which if you leave the gourds on the vine, they will continue to grow. The same gourd that was there today and was smaller will be the gourd that's there when it is bigger. So that is a natural progression. That is something that you could say is here today versus milking of the goats or the shearings of the ewes. Over there, when you milk the goats, all the milk is gone. When you come to fulfill your obligation vis-a-vis the quantity, the new milk that you get is exactly that, new milk. It is not an expansion of the original milk. It's not growth of the original milk. And the same thing with the shearings. Once you've sheared the ewe, the new wool that grows there is a completely new item. It's panim chadashot bodekan. And therefore, you can't say that the wool that you have today will progress or grow into the wool that quantity that you need in the future, because that's just not true. It's not the same wool. It's not the same wool that is growing and then you're shearing that same wool. It's rather, that was the wool that you sheared and now new wool grows after that fact. Unlike the gourd, where the gourd itself, that item itself is what expands into the item that you need. All right, now, Tosafot raises an issue that many of the Rishonim tried to deal with over here, is that Rav, later on, in the end of the Perek, on Daf Ayin Gimel, says that by a case of a pardesa, the case of a vineyard, where a person buys something for the future production of the vineyard, Rav says that's problematic. Now, if you believe over here that with the gourd, that it's okay, like Rav says, then what do you do with Rav's position later on? Rav suggests that it's problematic to purchase it today for forward delivery. So one answer of Tosafot is what you are suggesting. So Tosafot says, "Ikadam rei nami de shari rova, kaven de memelo karabu, achi afilo liba de Rav." That here, since it happens naturally, even Rav would agree that it is mutar. Vaflagav de hata nami memelo karabi. So to over there by the vineyard, the grapes grow naturally. So why is that different than the gourd? Over there, the fruit has yet to emerge on the vine. So over here, you're dealing with a gourd that has already emerged, and that gourd itself will expand into the larger gourd. Over there, where he's selling the output of the vineyard forward, the fruit itself has yet to emerge on the vine. And therefore, selling forward is problematic because he doesn't have it in hand yet, even though naturally it will happen. But since none of the fruit, or not even an immature fruit, is on the vine, that is the difference. You can see here that the bet, the old bet in the gra says, "V'nira benai avayrashi sham varosh v'ashara poskim kadvu boser osmadar." So everybody else writes in the sugya later on that we're talking about an immature grape on the vine. So the distinction that Tosafot draws here, nobody else explains the Gemara later on in that way, that it's not yet the fruit has emerged. Tosafot gives that as one possibility. In the Magen Mishnah, using the understanding of the Rif and the Rambam and the Sugya that we're talking about, the question of whether you can own a Dalat Kitana versus the case of the Pardes, where you're not allowed to do it, he says that those are different items. The Dalat grows by itself, doesn't need a lot of input for it to continue to grow. The grapes, on the other hand, take a lot of input to grow, and therefore you can't make a claim that you purchased it while it was a small fruit, and now it's your fruit growing on the vine when it needs so much input from the seller. In addition, the Magen Mishnah answers on behalf of Rashi here, and you can see that in the Gra. He brings the Magen Mishnah and suggests, people don't normally sell fruits at that stage of their growth. And since it's not normal to sell the fruits at that point in time, you can't make a claim that the buyer now took possession of the fruit at that point, and it is his until the point of maturity. So then, Tosafot also offers another alternative, which is, that maybe in the case over there by the vineyard is only when he's promising him a certain amount of production, which is equivalent to the case here in the Braita, where if he promises him a quantity, then it's problematic. But had he just said to him, hein ma'at, hein rav, had he said to him, whatever the vineyard produces, whether it's a lot or a little, then even Rab would agree that it is mutar. Really, Rab says it's a sur later on. It's because he's giving a quantity, similar to in the Braita. When you quantify it, that causes you a problem. If you sell him whatever it produces, and he takes the risk as to what the production is, then there's no problem with it. And that's what the case is speaking about over here, because he doesn't promise him anything in a particular quantity. He's just simply saying to him, whatever I milk out of the goats, that is fine. So again, if you make the case over there equivalent to this case, then Rab would say the same thing. Tosafot suggests that. Once again, the Gra says over here, Nirbeinai aval kol haposkim chokim hazeh. Everyone else disagrees with this, and that is not a chiluk or a distinction that can be made. So the earlier distinction, the first distinction that Tosafot makes, is one that not everybody disagrees with. The other two suggestions that he made, most of the poskim disagree with. The first suggestion he makes is that there might be a difference between the case of the milking of the goats and a case of a pardesa. And that is because the amount of time that will elapse between the purchase and the result of the purchase. When it comes to a goat, and he says, I'm going to give you this and this quantity of milk out of the goat. So if it takes him a day or two to milk the goat, he's not going to discount the price for that. Because the person knows that he gets the milk today, he'll get a little more milk tomorrow, he's fine with that. By the pardesa, where it's a long-range purchase, where he's purchased today for delivery way out at the harvest, over there he will take a significant discount to the purchase price or the market price because he's taking all that risk of the delivery and that which is in the future. He's giving him money way up front. And so for that reason, he says, the hachi emri gilut lezalzel bishvila hamtanat yomo yomayim. People aren't going to be so upset or moved to discount for a day or two. The kach mutar, therefore it's okay, shemekabel alav hefseid veschar. Because he does not quantify it and simply says, I'll take whatever it produces, and since he accepted whatever is the upside or downside, that's fine. Kach yechol hefseid kamo leistaker. So here he could lose just as much as he can make. So even in the end, if the delivery or the payout is greater than what he expected, that's not called interest. Aval pardesa, when you're talking about a vineyard, because he discounts it so significantly, he's buying it when it's still an immature grape. And for the prepayment before the harvest, ozil gabe, that is why he's discounting it. Babi agar natar. For that reason, it's considered to be payment of interest. Now, afagab the hotam, nami zimnin dipahutuyua. There over there, there's risk in the fact that maybe the grapes in the end will not produce good wine. Maybe there'll be a problem with the wine that these grapes produce, and he's actually buying the wine for it, not just the grapes for it. And there could be a problem with the wine. But Rav lo chayshachi delo shchiachava. That's not a common occurrence or a common loss that will happen. So Tosafot says over there, the reason Rav doesn't let you sell forward the grape harvest is because of two reasons. One is the significant time elapsed between the purchase and the delivery makes it that the discount will be significant. That's number one. So the chances of you losing, number one, are very low because the discount is big enough to ensure that you won't lose out. The only possibility of you losing out if it's a complete bust, which is that there's tiyua, that the grapes are somehow not good for making wine, or there's something wrong in the grape itself. He says that's so uncommon that that type of loss doesn't make it that you're not earning interest over here. That's not enough of an offset to say that this is considered to be a equivalent of a loan, and you're getting paid for that loan by the discount in the payment for the grapes for forward delivery. On the other hand, in our case here, where we're speaking about the milking of the goats, it happens in a very short duration, and therefore the discount, even if there is a discount, is not significant, and he is accepting upon himself both the schar and the hefseid. He's accepting upon himself both the upside and the downside, and over here, there is more chance of there being a discrepancy between the price he's paying and the delivery amount that he's getting. Even though if he gets more, it looks like he's getting extra because he forwarded him the money. But in the same vein, he could get a little less and he would still have to accept whatever it is. And in addition to that, he hasn't discounted it, if at all, significantly enough to make it that it covers any losses, and therefore he could sustain a loss over here. He could lose out. When you enter into a transaction, and we're going to see that in a minute in the Gemara, where the risk and reward are of somewhat of an even nature, then that's called a transaction. That's called the purchase of the item because the risk is shifted to the buyer. That's fine because that's not a loan. That's a purchase. The case of a loan, and the way to define a loan is that you lend the money with almost certain return of profit. If you have certainty or almost near certainty of profit on the money that you're handing out, then it becomes more the equivalent of a loan and you're entering interest because you forwarded the money rather than it considered to be a purchase. All right, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi, Shari Le Inish, Lemei Marle Le Chavre. Person has permission to say to his friend, Helech Arba'a Zuzei Achavita De Chamra. Here you go, take 4 Zuz for the barrel of wine. Itakfa Birshutcha. If it goes bad, meaning that it sours, it becomes vinegar, it's your problem. Iyakra Izila Birshuti. If it appreciates or depreciates in value, that will be my problem. So I'm accepting the appreciation and depreciation of the market price of the wine. I'm accepting that risk. You take the risk that the wine goes bad and now is vinegar. So now it seems like the structure of the transaction is that he's giving him cash up front. So he's purchasing it up front, but he's shifting the burden or the risk onto the seller, which is that the seller is taking the risk of something going wrong with regards to the wine turning into vinegar. And the buyer is taking the market risk. So now, in that case, he says that it's mutar. What Abai is suggesting is that there's enough of sharing of risk over here that that's not considered to be rebate. So now this is interesting because we've until now said that you can't buy wheat for delivery because the fact that the market price can go up, and if it goes up, it looks like it's interest because he's delivering you something worth more money for the cash that you presented up front. Why don't we say the same thing over here? So there are different ways to distinguish this from the cases that we've said until now, and it does shed some light on the cases that we've seen until now. It's very bothersome. Why is it that when you buy wheat for forward delivery, that's considered to be mechzek ribit rather than a purchase? You are accepting the market vagaries, whether it goes up or down, you're going to get take or take delivery of that wheat. So that means that you really bought it and undertook the risk that's associated with it. So why over there is that considered to be mechzek ribit? And over here, where he undertakes the market fluctuations, that's considered to be as if he bought it, then he took enough risk that it's not considered to be mechzek ribit. So there are different ways to deal with this. One way to deal with it is what the Balei Tosafot suggest over here. They question what exactly or how exactly was the transaction formed. Was there a kinyan over here? Was there no kinyan over here? So he gives, the first answer is, V'ish lamar, lolam damayri kishamashach. He made a kinyan here. V'afili ochi asur, here would be asur, amar izila b'shutcha, t'chashi karov v'schar rachok le'efseid. That if he had told him that you also have to take the depreciation, then it would be problematic because then it's too certain that he's going to profit. Even though he's mashach, even though he's made a kinyan on it, that kinyan is not enough of a kinyan to make it his, since he's now pushing the risk onto the seller, which is the risk for both the chance it turns into vinegar, as well as the fact that the market price drops over here. So since it's a one-sided or lopsided type of transaction, that's already considered more like a loan or mechzek ribit than a transaction. Alavada kaven d'achrayut hefseid al mekabel lo mahani afilu b'tnai lachshivam pikadon. And even though you made all of these conditions here and you purchased it, you can't say because I purchased it and I made a kinyan and it's a pikadon. It's really mine. Well, it's really mine except for the fact that you have all the risk. That's not called you buying it. It doesn't mean that it becomes your pikadon. Inami Mari Kishalomashach. Possibility is we didn't make a kinyan. But Tzarech Lad notes, and he has to make the t'nai, Dilo Matne Ika Mishapara. If he didn't make the t'nai, then there'd be a Mishapara for him backing out of it. Dembo Kokach Hefseid. Because there's not such a big loss here. Dika Nechle Bechalot Femi Bechamra. Because there are some people who like vinegar more than wine. Some people need wine vinegar, and therefore they want the challah just as much as they want the wine. Therefore, he has to make the condition. Even if he didn't stipulate a condition, he should be able to back out of the transaction because it's a mechach ta'ot. He bought wine, and the guy's delivering him vinegar. So then why is there a problem over here? The kach nira, so he says, therefore I believe, the takfa the hocha, lam hainu shechmitz. The takfa here is not what it means all over Shas, that it became vinegar and not wine. Ela kilkul ba'ama. Something went wrong with the wine. Aval, takif the hocha, inze a kilkul ara oi lamod, mi tishrei, beinze mekach ta'ut. But it's not the type of problem that already was pre-existing. Or the problem was underlying the wine that he had, and therefore, it's not classified as a mekach ta'ut. Mekach ta'ut is when you purchase something, and then it turns out to be vinegar. If it turned out to be vinegar later on, the fermentation that caused the vinegar to come about already started when you bought it. There was already something wrong in the wine at the time that you bought it, and therefore it's a mekach ta'ut. But here we're talking about something that went wrong with the wine that developed at a later date, meaning that you purchased it. When you purchased it, it was full-fledged wine, and therefore there's no mekach ta'ut. The fact that it soured or something happened over time that's not it becoming vinegar, so that wasn't a pre-existing condition, then you can't claim mekach ta'ut, because when you bought it, you got what you asked for, and now you have to deal with whatever is delivered to you because you took ownership, quote-unquote, of it early on. But had it been for vinegar or the changing into vinegar, that's a much more common occurrence. And if the seller was to undertake the responsibility for the vinegar coming about, then that would have been deemed to be ribit, because he's taking on too much of the risk. Were it not for the fact that vinegar already starts out as vinegar, I mean, the problem pre-existed, and therefore when you bought it, it was a mekach ta'ot. So that's how Tosafot deals with this case, or suggesting that it's different than the case of buying wheat for forward delivery. Number one is that either here there was a kinyan, and despite the kinyan, it doesn't help because he shifted some of the burden onto the other party. And once you shift the burden onto the other party, you can't claim you have a kinyan, it's yours, when you're shifting the burden to the other party. Or it's a case where he didn't take a kinyan mishicha, and he would be subject to mishipara, had it not been for the tnaim that he set up, the conditions that he set up, putting the burden on the seller. And then Tosafot says, with regards to vinegar, that can't be something that he's shifting the burden to the other party because that's a pre-existing condition. It's a pre-existing condition. It would deem it a mekach ta'ot, and he wouldn't even have to make a condition like that. And therefore, he reinterprets the word takfa over here to mean that it went bad, but something that happened over time, not something that was a pre-existing condition. And therefore, over here, the transaction involves the individual undertaking sufficient risk in the fluctuations of the market price, not undertaking the risk, whether you read it as it becoming vinegar, Tosafot said that would be obvious because it would be a mekach ta'ot anyway, or the fact that it goes bad, you don't take that risk. Now, most of the Rishonim, as we'll discuss in the Balei Tosafot later on, distinguish in the case here between the fact that here he's taking delivery of a particular product versus in the case of a forward purchase, where he's taking delivery in general of that product. And therefore, that makes it different than in the case where he makes purchase for forward delivery. As long as he either has it in possession or the readily available market price is there, it's mutar because he can deliver to him any commodity that fulfills whatever the purchase was for. Doesn't have to be any particular item. But that also means that the obligation to deliver quality produce naturally resides with the seller because in the end, he's got to deliver some commodity and there's no designated or particular item that he has to deliver. And so then that responsibility naturally resides with him. But on the other hand here, where they transacted over a particular item, for instance here, a barrel of wine, then the buyer owns the barrel of wine. If he owns the barrel of wine, then it should be his responsibility if something goes wrong. Now, when he passes that responsibility over to the seller, that's what generates the problem over here, because now the seller is taking on extra responsibility for receiving the cash early. And that's what generates the problem here in distinguishing this case from a normal case of a forward purchase. Amalei Rav Sharavya, the Abaye. Shavi says to Abaye, Hai Karov the sky, Brachok Hefsedo, there's an imbalance here. This person is in all likelihood going to profit and not lose over here. It's one thing if you're talking about a 60-40 distribution. Over here, you're talking about like a 90-10 distribution. which is 90% of the time the guy's going to walk away with his money or better, and in 10% of the time he might lose out. So that's not a transaction when you would say that he's undertaking enough risk, consider it to be a transaction rather than a loan, and mechze karibit. Samalei came into mekabalei zola, korov lezeh lezehu. Since he accepts the depreciation of value, it is just as equal, meaning that the risk, okay, we're not going to say it's 50-50, because he's pushing some of the risk back on the seller, the takfa risk, whether that's becoming vinegar, or like the Balei Tosafot says that it's something going bad with the wine later on, it's not a pre-existing condition, so it's 60-40. It's still enough of a distribution of risk where you can say that he's purchasing it and undertaking risk. It's not a case where he's going to be 90% sure that he's going to make profit over here, and only a small chance that he loses out. So that's why it's deemed to be a sale with risk undertaken on the product, and therefore the future delivery is not viewed as rebeat or looking like rebeat when he delivers something that is worth more in the future because of the fact that it could have just as easily been worth less, or it could have been that something went wrong and the guy will have to replace it. But again, if you look at the outcome of this or the balance here, turns out that it's a risk distribution that is fair enough that we consider it to be a transaction rather than a deemed loan or a vak rebit. So here again, we come back to what I said before. How is this different than buying wheat for forward delivery? Over there, you also undertake the responsibility if it goes up or down in market price, yet we say that it's mechze karibit if it goes up in price. So what the Balei Tosafot say over here is something that clarifies a lot in what I think has been unspoken about this, which is that when you buy for forward delivery at a discounted price, it's almost certain that the price will climb over that period of time. Because what happens here is that they have the harvest, before the harvest especially, but even at the time of the harvest, there's plenty of produce out there, but it's not usable produce. Because it needs to be dried out, it needs to be milled, meaning that it takes time for it to be usable produce and something that has utility for you. For that reason, if you purchase it at the time of the harvest, the price that you pay at the time of the harvest is something that will almost inevitably go up. The chances that that price goes down is so low. And yet there could be a market flood of wheat in the market, but that should be already obvious at the time of the harvest, the size of the harvest. But, okay, there are chances, an outside chance that the price will go down. But in 90% of the times, the price will appreciate in the future. For that reason, when you purchase it for forward delivery, and if he doesn't have it in hand, or there's not a readily available market price, the discount that you're receiving almost inevitably will lead to you either getting something that's break-even or to the upside. And for that reason, that's why it's mechze karibit. Their undertaking the market variations or fluctuations isn't sufficient because there really isn't so much in the way of market fluctuations. There's only almost one direction, which is up. And if that's the case, then you can't enter a transaction like that because in essence, you're just lending him money. Yes, you're purchasing it for forward delivery, but you're prepaying him. And in prepaying him, he's providing you a discount because he gets the money up front. That discount is deemed to be imputed interest if he delivers you something in the future that is worth more. And it looks, or mechze can be beaten. That's why the Rabbanon will oser in that case. Whereas in this case, there's enough fluctuation or variation in the market price that undertaking of the risk makes it that it's not deemed to be interest. And that's what Tosafot is doing over here, is trying to determine what's the difference between this and those other cases. So another difference that he suggests is that in this case, where he pushed the risk of it becoming vinegar, according to Tosafot, some sort of kilkul, he pushed onto the seller, but he takes on all other responsibilities or risks. So that also be different than a forward purchase. In the case where you buy the wheat for forward delivery, you're accepting market variations, but you're not accepting any underlying risk in the product itself. So that's what Tosafot goes through here to show, that even if you make a kinyan mishicha on the items, this is Tosafot the Shitato, says that the kinyan is there to ensure that we are posek the damim and it doesn't look like rebeat. But the kinyan is not there to really put the actual item into your possession to say that he can't eat it or he can't replace it with another item. So in that case, the problem is that you do not own a particular bushel of wheat. He just has an obligation to deliver a bushel of wheat. Even if you made a kinyan, that kinyan is not to make it that this bushel has to be delivered, just to make it that it should not look like ribit anymore. So it's not a psikat of ribit. But otherwise, he has to deliver you some generic wheat at the time point of delivery. So in that case, he is accepting the market variations, but he's accepting no underlying risk with regards to the loss of that product. On the other hand, this individual here, where he redistributed the risk and said, look, I'll take the market risk, but you're going to take the risk of it turning into vinegar or it going bad some way. Nevertheless, he still retains the risk that, say, for instance, the crop is lost, or a risk that there's force majeure, that there's some sort of war or something happens and the product is gone. He still retains that risk. And therefore, this case with Abaye is a much more even-handed risk acceptance, because the buyer has not just market risk, he has risk of loss that could exist over here, and that's why it's not considered ribit. In the case where you're buying the wheat forward, the only thing you accepted is market risk. And maybe that's not enough. Or even if you say that market risk is enough, the case where you're buying for forward delivery of the wheat, we said before that it's almost inevitable that the price goes up, because it happens every year. If you buy it when the harvest comes out in Nisan, you're going to get a discount. You buy in Tishrei when it's already dried out and it's finished product, you're going to pay a higher price. Every year, the price in Tishrei is higher than the price in Nisan. And that is because there's the carrying cost. The carrying cost is that the person has to deal with the wheat over that period of time. He has to dry it out. He's responsible for it. So he's going to charge you for that difference. So that makes it almost inevitable that the price is going to go up. And therefore, if you buy it at a discount up front, that is because you're forwarding the money that he's giving you the discount for future delivery. So again, if he has it in hand, or there is a readily available market price where he can get it, then we don't have a problem with that, because basically it appreciates in the possession of the buyer. But he's doing it prior to that point, when the individual doesn't have it in hand, and there's no readily available market price, then the discount becomes almost mechse kribit, because the discount is going to result in a higher payment in the back end, which is almost inevitable. And the appreciation is happening not in the possession of this individual, because there was nothing to acquire at that point in time. Now, some of this might be affected by the modern day difference in commodity prices, where, yes, commodity prices have, in certain instances, local or particular impact to a region. But when you're talking about world commodities and the price can fluctuate based on many factors that are not just connected to the local market, the certainty of price appreciation might not exist there, even though there's natural seasonality. So for instance, gas prices move up from the winter to the summer because more people drive in the summertime. Nevertheless, just because you bought gas in the winter at the winter price for delivery in the summer, there's no guarantee that the summer price will be above the winter price you bought it at, because gas prices are also determined by the world price for barrels of oil. And so the oil price could drop significantly from the winter down to the summer, and that would override the natural seasonality of gas. And so that might change the dynamic today, by which in certain commodities, there's enough market risk involved, both to the upside and the downside, that when you buy it for forward delivery, it's not mechse kribit anymore, because there's no certainty that, or near certainty, that it will appreciate. Okay, now the Mishnah says, Amoved chaveiro lo yidor b'chatzeiro chinam. Person who lends money to his friend, the individual who is the creditor may not live in the debtor's property for free. And he may not also rent that property from the debtor at a discounted rental price, because that's like interest. It's effectively interest. His waiving of getting paid for the rental of the property, or his discounting of the rental price of the property, is the equivalent of basically paying you interest for the money that you gave him up front. Because the discount or the free stay is because of the loan that you gave him. And so in those cases, it is deemed interest, because the benefit that you're garnering is because you gave him money up front. Amar Rav Yosef ben Yumi, Amar Rav Nachman, Afal Pi Shamru, even though we say Adar b'chatzer chaviro shelo midato, einu tzarich la'alot lo schar, even though we learned in the Gemara in Baba Kama, zeh neneh v'zeh lo chaser, you do not need to pay in that case. If the individual would not have lent out the property or rented out the property anyway, so he's not losing out by you living there, had the person not come and lived in this property, he would have rented somewhere else. So he's Zenene. So this is Zenene. Bezelo Chaser. So even though in that situation, we would not demand payment from him, he has no legal claim to get payment. So it would have seemed that even in the context of a loan, that should not be problematic because there's no quote-unquote interest or effective interest here because he wouldn't have paid anyway. Nevertheless, he'll vow the darba chatzero if he lends him money and lives in his chatzer, tzarich la'alot lo schar. There he does have to give him schar. Maika mashmalan. What are you teaching us over here? Tanina, it's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, amoved chaviro, lo yidor b'chatzero chinam. If you lend money to an individual, you may not live in his property for free. V'lo yisgor mimenu b'pachot. And he may not rent for him at a discount, mibnei shehu, rebeat, because it is interest. So what are you telling us that our Mishnah didn't already tell us? Imi matzniten, had it been from our Mishnah, havamina hani mile b'chatzer d'kaimel agro. It's a chatzer that is available to be rented out. The gavra, the avi, the megar. And it's an individual who normally would pay rent. So then that is zenene v'zechoser. So that's why our Mishnah says in that case that you can't do this. Because it's clear that in this situation you would have to pay him. Because it's zenene zechoser. That's a case where you have an obligation to pay. That's why it's deemed to be interest. Aval chatzer, the lo kaima lo agra. If it's a chatzer that is not normally rented out, the gavra de lo avi the megar, and it's an individual who normally does not pay rent, this is the girsa of Rashi, amalo. I would have thought there that it wouldn't be problematic, because our Mishnah only says it's problematic when he would have to be alot lo schar. Kamash malon, that it is problematic. And that's the chiddush over here, that even in a situation where the person would not normally rent this property out, and the individual normally would not pay rent, so it's ze lo nene, vze lo chaser, despite the fact it is asur. So that's Rashi's reading of the Gemara, which is the Gemara is dealing with two extremes. The Mishnah is a case where it's zenene, vze chaser, and that's why the Mishnah says it's asur. Along comes Rav Yosef Bar Neume in the name of Rav Nachman to tell us that it's not only asur where it's zenene, vze chaser, but it's even asur, vze lo nene, vze lo chaser. That's how big a chiddush it is. The easier way to read it, or what you would have thought the girsa might be over here, a case that involves a case of zenene v'zelo chaser. Because that's really the question. I mean, in a case where it's zelo nene v'zelo chaser, over there you could really think that it should be totally mutar. In the case of zenene v'zelo chaser, where mi'ikar adin, you don't have to pay, intzirich lalodo schar, that's what you learn from the Gemara in Baba Kama, that in that case you don't have to pay schar, nevertheless, there still is a semblance or a reyach of hana'ah or deemed interest over here. Because this person is neheneh. He is getting a benefit. That benefit might be enough to deem it interest, even though it's not significant enough to force him to pay. Because payment is not just determined by your benefit. It's determined by whether the other person had to give something up to provide that benefit. But as far as interest is concerned, it doesn't matter that the other guy is not giving up anything. It matters that you are benefiting. Your benefit already looks like interest, and therefore we would restrict it. So there are others with the girsa, not like Rashi, which makes it an extreme case where it's zelo nene, zelo chaser, but rather in a case where it's zenene, zelo chaser, and kamash malon, that is problematic. Now Rashi says from that, kamash malon, demechzek rebit, it looks like rebit. It's not really rebit. Because over here, you're not getting monetary value out of it, because you wouldn't otherwise pay for this. According to Rashi, especially since it's a case where ze lo nene v'ze lo chaser, so certainly there's no monetary benefit that you could even consider. But even according to those that say it's in a case of ze nene v'ze lo chaser, there is some benefit, but the benefit is not a monetary benefit, it is a hana'ah. And it looks like rebate. It's not actual rebate because you weren't entitled to payment for that situation. V'yesh l'mod mikan, Rashi says, she'asur la'avot abayit v'ladurbo. You are not allowed to lend money with a house as a mashkon and then live in the house. And that's even if, b'nechaita, Rashi says, even if you're going to defease the loan based on the rent you would have paid. So you lend money to an individual and the collateral for that is a house. The house is empty, so you go ahead and live in the house. Now you're paying him rent, not actually you're physically paying him rent. You're paying him rent by deducting it from the principal amount of the loan. So Rashi says you're not allowed to do that. Now the truth is, if that was just the case, it shouldn't be problematic. Obviously, Rashi is also suggesting that there's a discount in the rent payment. That even though you're paying him rent and deducting that from the principal amount, he's still giving you a discount on the rent. And Rashi says that is problematic. The lo dami le mashkona shel kerem. It's not similar to the mashkona of the kerem that we spoke about before, where if you take the fruits and deduct the value, that's okay. The hotam zimnin de lo shakol be mide. Because over there, there's risk. So the individual says, look, I'm going to lend you money, and your vineyard is going to be collateral. Not only is your vineyard going to be collateral, I'm going to take the grapes from the vineyard every year, and then I'm going to monetize them, and I'm going to, whatever I pay you for those grapes, we're going to deduct from the principal amount. Now, over there, again, Rashi assumes that there's a discount paid for the grapes. He's not paying the full market value for those grapes. He's paying a discounted price. Nevertheless, it's okay, because over there, there's risk. The risk is that there will be no grapes at the time of the harvest. This individual is not certain that he's going to get the grapes, but he's agreed to deduct every year from the loan a fixed amount for the right to take the grapes from the field. Since he has a fixed amount that will be deducted, whether there's production in excess of that value or less than that value, therefore it's not considered to be mechzeh k'ribit, it's okay. Over here, the individual has no risk. He's living in the house and he's taking a discounted rent. Yes, he's going to deduct that discounted rent from the loan amount, but the problem is that he has no loss. He will be in the house. What's his downside in the house? And therefore Rashi says that is asur. Aval kan zenene tamid, vein kan safek, nimsa sochra bipachot. Since over here he has no risk, he's buying it or basically renting it at a discount, and he will always have the upside, which is he would have gotten the equivalent of the benefit of the rent of staying there over that whole period. And there's no chance he won't get that hana'ah. Since there's no risk, when you discounted it, that is deemed interest, or that's mechzeh k'ribit. That is Rashi's conclusion. The Baalei HaTosafot bring Rashi, and the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and the Rabbeinu Tam says there's risk in a rental as well. Just like there's risk in buying the production of grapes from the field and each year at a fixed price, there's also a risk when you rent based on a fixed deduction from the loan every year. And that is the possibility. The Bayit Nami, Zimnin Delo Shakil Mide. Oh, no fell, oh, Nisraf. There are times where the house falls down, the house burns down. Oh, Shalo Yitzarechlo. Or he didn't need a house that year. He didn't need the property to live in. So therefore, there should be no difference. And that's what the Bayit Tosfot say. Oh, Ben Bayit, Ben Sadeh. Whether it's a house or a field. Asur, where he doesn't lend the money particularly for them, then it's asur bepachot lechol preot ledur bebayit. If the mashkon wasn't these particular items, then you cannot take them at a discount. It is asur to take them at a discount. Alheicha shehil ve'alabayit o alasadeh, but if the loan is collateralized by the house or by the field, mutar b'nechaita, then if you take down or defease the loan for a fixed price every year, even if it's discounted, dein mafsid bal hasadeh bal chatzer. Because then the owner of the field or the chazer is not really losing out. Delav hachi lo yuchol laskiro lacherim. Because either way, he wouldn't be able to rent it out to other people. Shezeh echzik bo b'mashkon. Because it is collateral now. Oh, v'kasha. So the Tosfot asks you a question. It goes, what do you mean? Da'atu l'fishez muksak b'mashkon, your kavua perot. Just because this guy has it as collateral, all the fruits have to rot every year? That doesn't make any sense. What? Either you give it to the guy who is the collateral or it rots? No. You sell off the fruit, you monetize it, and then you pay off the loan with that. So therefore, Tosafot rejects this understanding and says, V'yesh latein tam acher l'dvarav. Maybe there's another way to explain the Rabbeinu Tam's position, but not for that reason, which is, k'she malvel abayit ol ha-sadeh, shori tfei menechaita davi kilu ha-sadeh biyado b'torat mecher kol atan shenim. Then when you take it as a mashkon, we look at it almost as equivalent of as a purchase or a lease for that period of time. Because there's a possibility of default, and then you will get the item or the mashkon. Since that is the case, when you take delivery of the fruits, even though it's at a discounted price, as long as you're deducting at a fixed rate per year, or you're taking the equivalent value of renting in the house and staying in the house, those cases it'd be mutar, because it's almost like you own it. It's almost like you bought it for the case of mashkon. we're speaking about here is a case where he's just taking a discount on the rent. So there you have to say that the discount is because of the loan. So why is it allowed if you deduct that? Rashi says you have to differentiate between a field and a house. In a field, there's risk that you won't take delivery on whatever it is that you're getting. Therefore, it's considered to be a fixed payment that is deducted, and you have equal risk. Since you have equal risk, it's not considered to be interest, the discount. On a house, where there is no risk, that's considered to be interest because you have no risk in the discount that you got for that rental piece. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, a house has risk just like a field, and therefore, there is as much risk in a house as there in a field, and it would be mutar in that case as well. But it's only mutar where you're lending with those items being the collateral. If you just lent them in general, and these items aren't the collateral, then you can't create this discounted scenario. So then, why is it that when you, these are the particular collateral, it works? So Rabbeinu Tam at first suggested that it's because you own it, and he can't do anything with it anyways. That's what says that doesn't make sense, because you really can rent it out to someone else. You can sell the produce and then use the money. So then in the end, he says, maybe it's as if you own it. Because it's a mashkon, it's as if you own it, and therefore, since it's as if you own it, when he gives you that discount or allows you to use it, that's not so problematic. We don't look at that discount as being problematic. In the end, Tosafot backs away from that and says that other Gemaras seem to support Rashi's interpretation more heavily, even though both the Tor and the Ramah, possibly like the Tosafot over here, that there's no difference between a Bayit and a Sadeh. Nevertheless, the Rambam, as the Gra says, favors Rashi's interpretation. And he also makes a distinction that if you don't do it with a deduction, then the interest that you're collecting is also different. That if you collect interest on the field, it's only interest me the Rabbanan. If you collect interest on a house, it's interest d'oraita. That maintains the distinction that Rashi is making over here, which is Bayit is much more secure than the field. So in the field, it'll only be ribit me the Rabbanan, and the house will be ribit d'oraita if you don't reduce the principal amount for it. So Rashi sees Bayit and Sadeh being different in their risk parameters, and therefore the din is different. The Rabbeinu Tam sees them as being the same. And again, the Bali and Tosafot try to explain that position of the Rabbeinu Tam, but in the end, the other Gemarot seem to favor Rashi's interpretation over here. Now, Rabbi Kiva Eger points out over here that the Rabbeinu Tam's assumption that there is equal risk when the house falls down is not necessarily true, and much more favors Rashi's interpretation over here, because you only pay him the rental income or the equivalent of a fixed price per year to live there if the house is standing. If the house falls down, you no longer pay rent for it because there's nowhere to live. So even if, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, who says there's risk here that the rental could fall through and you paying a fixed deduction per year for that, you're not going to pay that deduction if there is no house in which to live in. Kashali, ha'im yipol lo ya'anachayta rak lefi erech shedarbo. Because if it falls down, the deduction's only going to be for the months that he lived there or the period of time that he lived there. From that period forward, he's not going to deduct from the outstanding principal because he doesn't have any ability to live there. And if he pays it irrespective of the house falling down, then it looks much more like a sadeh. Meaning that if he's going to pay that rental income, whether or not there is a house there, and he's going to deduct that from the principal every year, then it looks like sadeh. And what Rashi says is true as well, because now the bayit looks like a sadeh, not a bayit anymore. But if you connect the rental income that you're going to pay to the house being available, then in that case, the Rabbeinu Tam's assumption that there is equal risk here in the house, just like in the sadeh, happens not to be true, because as soon as the house is burnt down or is lost, you stop deducting that from the principal amount because you're no longer garnering the benefit of the rental income. Now, the Gemara continues and says, Ikad Amre, Amr Rav Yosef, Barim Yumi, Amr Rav Nachman, Afo Pishamru Adar B'chazir Chavero Shlomi Dato, Eino Tzarich Lalot Noschar, Zen Nenev Zelo Chaser, you don't have to pay, Hilvani Vidor B'chatzirai, B'chatziri, lend me money and you can live in my chatzir, Tzarich Lalot Noschar, then you have to pay for it. If he explicitly connects the permissibility of staying in his chatzir to the loan, then it is problematic. We noted this in Rav Nachman's statement yesterday, that something that otherwise would have been mutar, because it's done, derech mecha chumenkar, if you specifically connect it to the giving of the money or the lending of the money, it becomes a sur. And that might have been the chiddush of Rav Nachman yesterday, which is that even in cases where it's mecha chumenkar and it otherwise would have been mutar, it would be considered agar natar if you specify that the privilege is connected to the lending of the money. And that's what he's doing here. Lend me the money, and then you can live in my chatzer. Connecting those two items makes it problematic, even though Zenen if it's a little chasr, wouldn't have to pay. Manda amar hilvau kol shekein hilvani. The first memra, or the first version of Yosef Bar Miune, which says that if he lent him, he's not allowed to live in the chatzer where Zenenev is a lo chaser. Certainly in the case where he borrows it and says, you can live there, lend me the money, and then you can live there, that would be problematic. Mandar Mar Hilvani, according to the second version of Rabbi Yosef Bar Miune, where he says only where he specifies that I'm borrowing the money, therefore you can lend there, is it problematic? Of olivo lo. If he just lends him generically and then the guy goes lives there, it's not problematic. My taima. Kevin to me kara lava daita the hochi osve le lamba. Since he did not originate the loan because of this privilege or this benefit, there is no problem. And there is no problem because it's zenene, vizilo chaser. He wouldn't have otherwise paid for this privilege anyway. So since there was no connection between the privilege and the loan, that is why it is mutar over here. So now, Tosafot over here says, according to the first version of Rabbi Yosef Bar Miune, you have a serious issue, which is that whenever you lend some money to someone, even if he's your friend, you can no longer interact with him in the normal way that you interacted before. We're saying here that Zenenev is Elo Chaser, which otherwise would not be problematic, you're not allowed to do that in the case where there's a loan outstanding. And therefore, Tosafot says you're going to come to some ludicrous outcome here where you have a friend who you otherwise would have lent things to, and he would borrow things from you all the time, but now that you lent him money, he can't borrow those items without paying for them, he can't take things from you without paying for them. All of a sudden, everything looks like rebeat. And that seems outlandish, because until this point, you guys were good friends, and you would have done this, irrespective of the fact that you lent him money now. Now that you lent him money, you can't borrow from him, you can't do anything with him for free? Doesn't make sense. And so the Baalei Tosafot come up with a distinction and suggest that based on Biyash Le'amar, D'davka B'mili D'befehesya V'av Shetuva Asar Hache Kulihai, that things that are asur are only things that are public, and Avsha means makes a lot of noise, but they become well known, or things that are obvious. So what Tosafot says is that the reason that over here we're saying that Zenenev, Zelo Chaser, is a sur, even though technically you wouldn't pay for this privilege anyway, and in any other circumstance you would have gone in there, not paid for it, and nobody would have said anything, but because in the context of a loan it's problematic, the reason it's problematic is because this is a very public type of thing. Everybody knows you're living there, and everybody gets word of it. It's something that has self-announcing properties to it, and for that reason, you can't do it. Because it looks bad. It's mechze kiribit. But that means that things that you normally did with this individual would not be a problem. In addition to that, you could suggest that the problem here is only because he's living there without permission. Aval midato, but if he lived there with permission, then it wouldn't have been asur. Unless it's something that he wouldn't have given permission had it not been for the loan. And the first stage, Tosafot makes a distinction between public types of things, which are asur because it's mechze kiribit, private things that are not problematic. Now, obviously, it's things that he would have done anyway. I mean, he would have lent you this item anyway. He would have given you whatever this gift was anyway. So if that's the case, then it's not mechze kiribit. Even though this case of Zenenev Zelo Chaser is mechze kiribit, because one is public and one is private, as long as you would have done it before. Tosafot goes as far as to say that even with regards to Zenenev Zelo Chaser renting out this property where you wouldn't have paid rent, the difference here is that you worked Zenenev Zelo Chaser is a case where you went in without permission. And that's why we would think maybe you have to pay for it, and Gemara concludes Zenenev Zelo Chaser doesn't have to pay. But had you gotten permission, Tosafot says over here, maybe even in that type of public situation, it still would not be mechze kiribit because you got permission for it. Had it been before the loan, and the guy would have allowed you to stay there anyway, you have guests coming for Shabbat, he would have lent you out his spare apartment anyway before the loan, then even when the loan's outstanding, if you have permission, then it's not a problem. So Tosafot goes as far as to say that the first stage or the first level is that public versus private. Public is mechze kiribit, private is not. But then he says, even with public issues, maybe the difference has to do whether you're doing it with permission or without permission. Without permission would be a problem of mechze kiribit. And with permission, would not be a problem next day Kirivit, had he been willing to do that anyway. Since the Tosfot through that solves a big problem with the sugya, which is that when you lend money to someone, does it all of a sudden make it off limits? Does your friendship collapse because of the loan? And the Baal Tosfot would say that that is untenable. And therefore they come up with a structure which differentiates between the case that we're speaking about here in the Gemara and what would be normal interactions between these individuals. For Yosef Rechama, so we had this story back in Baba Kama. Rav Yosef Rechama is Rava's father. And Rava was a great Talmud Chacham, in many cases gives a psak halacha or questions his father, who seems to also was a Talmud Chacham, but not on the level of his son, Rava. So over here we have an instance like that, where Rav Yosef Rechama, tokif avdei l'inshei demasek behuzuzei. He used to basically confiscate or press into service of Adim Knaniim of individuals who owed him money. And he made them work for him. So Rava's son said to him, "My time avid marachi. Why are you doing this? This is like classic interest. You lent him the money, and now you're basically pressing their servants into service for you because they haven't paid you the money back. In essence, you're getting interest on the loan." Amalei, anak Rav Nachman spherely. I hold like Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, avdan nehum grace lo shade. A slave is not worth the food that he eats. Meaning that I'm paying for the guy's food on that day that I use him to work, and there's no loss. There's no benefit and there's no loss, because the cost of the food is equivalent to the work that he does for me. Rav Nachman said that about one particular Eved Knani, Dari, his servant, Demarakeh Beikove, because he used to go around and dance and do comic relief in the bars to pay for his alcohol. So therefore, he is not worth the bread that he eats, because he's not a working type of slave. This is a guy who all he is after getting his drink, and he's going to the bars and dancing and all that sort of stuff. So he's earning his drink, and that's all he's doing. He's not providing enough benefit to Rav Nachman that his work offsets or overcomes the value of the food that he eats. But Avdi Achrina Emi Amar, but a normal slave who says that the value of the slave does not exceed the cost of his maintenance. Otherwise, nobody would keep slaves. It wouldn't be worth keeping slaves around. Amalei ana ki ad Rav Daniel bar Rav Katina. Amar Rav svirle. Okay, not Rav Nachman. I hold of this other memra from Rav. Amar tokev avdo shel chaveiro vasabo melachav patur. Someone who goes and presses his friend's slave into service and does work with it, even without his permission, he does not have to pay him for it. The nechele delo nistari avde, because the friend is happy that his slave is not idle. His slave is not becoming used to relaxing. You want to keep him engaged in work so that he stays strong, healthy, and has a good work ethic. So you're pressing him into service. It actually benefits the individual who slave is, and if you have to pay him for it. Says Amar Lei. Now the truth is, over there, as Rashi says here, Shaloyer Gil, Priyot Batel, Batel. Should be get used to having relaxation time, off time, and then become lazy. And as Yorub says over here, it's a lashon of stirab kilkul, that will ruin the Emet if he remains idle or lazy. So you're keeping him in working is the benefit to the owner as well. And therefore it's zenene v'zenelo chaser, or in a sense, zenene v'zenene. It's a case where both parties are beneficiaries over here. The truth is that that also has to be qualified, because that is only true in a situation where the individual doesn't need the evidence to work for himself. It's only when the evidence is idle that that is true. So assuming that the evidence is idle over here, then it's true that if you take him and press him into service, you wouldn't have to pay for it. So therefore, why is it a problem if I do this when I have a loan outstanding, because I wouldn't pay for it if I didn't have the loan outstanding? So Amalei, how do you need an A.K. Masak Bezuzet? That is only true when you don't have a loan outstanding. Mar, David the Masak Bezuzet, Maxay the Rebeat. You are right from a true monetary standpoint that there is no rebeat over here. You have a loan outstanding, you're not getting paid cash, and you're not doing something that would have paid you cash in this situation. So you're right, from a monetary standpoint, there is no rebeat. The problem is, Maxay the Rebeat. It looks like interest. The Amar Rav Yosef, and Yirmu, Amar Rav Nachman, Afo Bishamro, Darba Chatzir, Chariro, Shlom, and Dato, In Tzarech Lalo, Lo Tzchar. So even in a case where you have Zen and Evis, a little fuss, so you don't have to pay for it, Hilvo, if there is a loan outstanding, the Darba Chatziro, Tzarech Lalo, Lo Tzchar, and you live there, you have to pay rent there.
Amalei, Hadre B. So his father, Yosef Bechama, says, I'm backing away from it. You're right, Rabba, and I won't continue this practice. Again, even though the practice itself was not rebeat, it was only Mechsek rebeat, what Rabba's son points out to him is that we even have a problem of Mechsek rebeat, and that Mechsek rebeat makes it problematic when you have a loan outstanding. Even though in another situation you wouldn't pay for it, in this case where you have a loan outstanding, it becomes problematic because of the context and the public nature of what you are doing, and therefore it's Mechsek rebeat. And Rabba's father, Yosef Bechama, backs away from the practice and agrees to the psak of his son, Rabba. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Samakei, Amud Aleph.